court will proceed to the fourth case, Akindi v. Grounds. Kajewski.
May it please the court, good morning, Your Honors. I'm Phil Krajewski, and I represent the appellant in this case, Mr. Akindi. This is an appeal from a grant of summary judgment in our case, which brought a 1983 action alleging deprivation of a property interest in his employment without due process. Mr. Akindi was employed by the Illinois Department of Corrections since 1990, and in January of 2003, he was promoted to the position of clinical casework supervisor. Crucial to the case is that the bulk of the work there in the job description was supervisory. 5% of it sat on various committees. The position was, and his employment throughout, was protected by the Illinois Personnel Code and CMS rules, and no one in the case or the district court has questioned the property interest. The issue.
Why does he, though, have a due process interest in the proportion of time he spends inputting results of disciplinary matters into the computer system versus supervising other people? I mean, you concede that his job classification, his salary, never change.
We have a speculative argument
looking to the future that I find too speculative to qualify as any present due process interest. Right now, you're just complaining that the mix of his work shifts around.
No, that's not correct, Your Honor. What we do see in this case is that there is a future impediment, and
that's entirely speculative. We don't know if the Illinois authorities are going to take a look at that job. We don't know if they're going to reclassify it. They may decide that keeping good computer records is crucial to the future efficiency of the prison system, and you want highly qualified people doing it. I mean, I don't know what they're going to think. Right now, the only thing that happened to him before he went on his disability leave is he just was dissatisfied that the mix of work shifted around.
Well, two things. I think this is analogous to the Wozniak case, in which a professor at the U of I, he didn't lose any salary. He didn't lose his title. But after he had refused to comply with some requests of the administration, his teaching authority was taken away, and so was his research ability as far as support goes. And the court in Wozniak determined that although certainly he had due process, that's why he lost on it, because of the university's review process, but that he was deprived of a property right.
But he was a tenured professor. He had taught 28 years. He was fired from teaching any classes. He was stripped of all his research funds, and his new job was to just manage a website. So, I mean, that's very different from our situation.
Well, the court went off on the fact that he was going to lose his a chance to be promoted to full professor, and that he would lose consulting work and publishing work. So it was the court looked at the future and what could happen in the future, and I think that's very clear from the case. And the same thing in the Sonnleader case, where a nurse, male nurse, came back from being suspended and was not put in a supervisory role.
But ordinarily, though, we look, particularly when in some ways you've got to take the good with the bad. There's a structure that Illinois uses for these state jobs, and the structure has this other agency, whoever they are, CMS or somebody, describing both the responsibilities of the job. That's what gives him a protected property interest in the job itself to begin with, but it also demarcates the limits of those jobs. And within those limits, his job description indicated he might have a different mixture of things.
Well, as Board v. Roth, Supreme Court, talked about, you look at the dimensions of the state statute or regulations that have described the position. And in this case, what we have to look at is The state has in play the reclassification provisions, and it's foreseeable if you take...
But that's speculative. There's even a catch-all term in his job description that says sort of anything else we'd like you to do. Let me see. It's on page... It's in your appendix somewhere. But anyway, his job description does indicate that there's flexibility, and he's never docked a dime, and he keeps his job.
It's quite foreseeable, though, that when the reclassification statute kicks in, it's triggered, and if it occurs, he will lose because he's lost the supervision part of the job, and that's the main part of the job.
Or he might not. I mean, why isn't that when you need to bring that suit? It seems to me that that's not ripe yet.
I also think that he's lost a chance to be promoted within the Department of Corrections in a supervisory role. The next step up was another supervisory position, which he had been promised. So I think that if you look at Wozniak, you'll see that it's the same situation. It's speculative here, it's speculative there. It's the future economic impact which the court has now recognized in these decisions.
So is it your position that every time the state asks an employee to do his job duties or expands those job duties or takes away from some of the job duties that the state has to hold a hearing?
No, not at all. I think when you get to the point where you totally change the job around and take away all the supervisory duties of a supervisor, then yes, at that point you've crossed the line, because that's going to trigger the potential of a review. And if it is reviewed, there's no longer any supervision in the job, and it has to be lowered, and there is an economic loss. So this is not every time somebody shuffles a duty or shifts them around.
That become ripe, though, once the person gets rejected when they apply for a job on the supervisory chain? You know, so let's say the person's in the position, they don't have any supervisory duties, and then, you know, they're eligible for, you know, there's another job that comes up and they're told you can't do it because you're not a supervisor, you've never supervised before. Wouldn't that be the time to bring it up?
No more so than in Wozniak, which recognized that the future economic impact was important at the time. And I think the fact that we have...
Well, in Wozniak, though, it had become a completely different job, and I think that's the thing. Under the Illinois structure, there's a more structured way of changing jobs for people in something like Mr. Akande's job. It had not yet become a completely different job.
Well, Your Honor, as far as the supervision part of the job was, which is the bulk of it, it had, because he was stripped of any supervision over the caseworkers.
He's still doing these major adjustment committees, the major tickets, not just the minor tickets.
That's not a supervisory position.
I know, but it's one of those positions that only somebody in that job description does.
Well, they also have the counselors that are also on that committee, too, so he's just one of some of the
but
people.
You have to have one of the people in his position on it.
I don't dispute that, Your Honor.
Mr. Kajewski, what if you left the position, you were transferred from a position where you supervised three people, but you were assigned to a new post that had perhaps a more substantive responsibilities? It's a standalone, but it's considered in the scheme of things a more critical post. The very fact that that occurred is, and that the new post doesn't carry with it the supervision, would that be a problem?
It seems to me there's not the demotion potential there. If it's a more substantial job, it seems to me that there's not going to be any deprivation of
No, let's assume same pay and grade. It's just the nature of the work perhaps calls for a degree of reflection or scholarship that the other post didn't. The other was more managing people, which is obviously important. But this had a policy component, let's say, as opposed to just carrying out the policy of someone else. Would that be a problem?
That might not be a problem at all. In this case, the reason I say this is a problem is because it's quite clear that once the supervisory duties are gone, once it's reviewed, it's got to go down in grade. The situation you pose, it's not necessarily clear. It could be a comparable pay grade on that hypothesis.
Well, why does it have to go down in grade?
Because
on the hypothetical Judge Blum gave.
Because the job
he said, as I understood his hypothetical, same pay, right? Same pay.
Same pay. Why does he have to go down?
Why did you say it would be
go
down in grade? Yeah.
Because what CMS has to do is make sure that the jobs get equal pay for equal duties. Supervisory jobs pay more. And if you gut out that key component of what he did, he's a supervisor. He's no longer a supervisor. I mean, it's got to go down.
If he were made an executive assistant or administrative aide to the warden, same pay, same grade, but, of course, he'd have no responsibilities other than those specifically delegated by the warden. Is that, again, a situation which would give you concern?
I think that would still be different. I'd have to know more of the details, but I think that might be different from gutting the supervisory duties out of this job.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Wagner?
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Brett Wagner. I'm an Assistant Illinois Attorney General, and I represent the defendants' appellees in this case. Your Honors, this Court should affirm the District Court's judgment. Summary judgment was properly granted to the defendants, and this Court reviews that issue de novo. Your Honors, the United States Constitution was not offended by the fact that the plaintiff had to do some data entry. The due process claim fails because there was no protected right that was implicated by the Department of Corrections decisions. The scope and extent of the property interests that a condo may have had are defined by Illinois law. Illinois law gave Akande a property interest in his job such that he could not be discharged or demoted without cause. However, he was neither discharged nor demoted in this case. This court in the Adbury case, and I think it's very significant that there's no mention from the plaintiff today of the Adbury decision, which is extremely analogous to this case. This court in Adbury made clear that a plaintiff under Illinois, an employee of the state of Illinois, has no property interest in the particular job duties. He has no legitimate expectation that his job duties will not change.
So it's your position that in the district court's opinion on page 3, there are excerpts from his job description, mm-hmm. that it would be possible for the warden just to delete certain paragraphs and assign him responsibilities from other paragraphs, and that would all be within what he should expect.
That's correct.
So even if he deletes the paragraph about supervising staff and focuses entirely on paragraph 6, serving on adjustment committees and other sorts of things that are there under 6, he has no property interest.
That's correct. This job description is not the job description does not create a property interest. Illinois law does, the personnel code and the administrative regulations. And it's important to note that on the next page, paragraph 7 of that job description, which is page 2 of Exhibit R to the defendant's summary judgment motion, indicates, you know, that it's also a job duty to perform other duties as required or assigned reasonably within the scope of those enumerated above. I mean, even this specifically indicates that these aren't intractable things. These percentages, you know, assigned to each specific duty, you're not guaranteed. You don't have a property right enforceable by the Constitution and only serving 5% on adjustment committee. In fact, it would be inconsistent with the needs of the particular institution at the time. There's no doubt that prisons are dynamic situations, and the different prisons in Illinois have different needs. And supervisors need to be flexible in allocating their staff to the certain different things that need to get done. And maybe the case that in certain prisons, there's more adjustment committee hearings. The inmates have caused more problems, and we need to have more major ticket hearings. As a result, we need staff to devote more time to sitting on adjustment committees. And that's something, that's the flexibility that the supervisors, that the Department of Corrections needs to have. And it would be it would be strange to hold that the job description prevents supervisors from doing that.
So what if, just to take some of these other cases that your opponent's relying on, what if under the rubric of paragraph 7, the warden decides, to take an extreme case, to assign Mr. Akande to sweeping the floors, other duties as required or assigned, and in other words, I'm trying to suggest something that's a change of comparable scope to what we saw in Wozniak or some of the other cases.
I understand, Your Honor, and it is possible that we might get into a constructive discharge situation similar to Wozniak if it's of comparable scope. It certainly indicates that that's not the case here, that it was not of comparable scope. But important in Wozniak was the fact that this was a tenured teacher, a tenured faculty member. And I think implicit in the Wozniak court's holding is that you have, when you're a tenured faculty member, you have a property interest in teaching and or research. And all of that was completely taken away in Wozniak. Here, we don't have a promise of tenure to a faculty member. We have a CMS job description that itself indicates that the duties can be changeable within that.
But you're implying almost, well, I guess what I want to know, in the tenured faculty member situation, there are at least two things. One of two things would almost certainly have to be possible, either teaching or research, normally
yes.
Both. But I want to know whether there's any outside limit to the changes the warden could impose for somebody in the clinical casework supervisor position, as long as they were willing to keep paying him and they didn't change the job description on his pay stubs.
I would imagine, Your Honor, that yes, if the duties change completely to things that are not consistent with the enumerated job duties, then that situation could arise. I want to stress that that is not the situation here, that Mr. Akande still served on the adjustment committees. He still coordinated the pre-start program, and he still lectured. The evidence indicated that he was still supervising subordinates. The evidence has plenty of affidavits, a half dozen affidavits from his subordinates that indicate that he was still issuing orders to them. In fact,
don't we need to take that? I mean, it seems like that's a disputed fact, though. So don't we need to take that in light most favorable to him and assume that he isn't supervising people anymore?
Even if we would, I would indicate that, yeah, we do have to, of course, take the facts in the light most favorable to Mr. Akande. That's certainly true. His argument that he was not supervising people or that he had no supervisory duties and that his duties were only clerical, I think, is a characterization that we don't have to take. That's not a fact. It's more basically a legal conclusion determined from these are the facts he did, and then the characterization of these as supervisory or clerical is not something we're bound by. I'd also like to point out that he left on March 3rd, 2004, when he was given Exhibit Z, which was the clarification of his duties. Exhibit Z references, among other things, that he would be asked to perform the objectives outlined in CMS document CMS 201, which was Exhibit AA. Those objectives include supervising the delivery of counseling services, supervising the preparation of case reports. It's certainly not the case that all supervisory duties were removed. He's unhappy that he had to do more data entry. That's clear. But it's an important job, being the chairperson on adjustment committees of major disciplinary problems. And it is an important job doing the other things he did, which are beyond what simply the counselors did. His duties still reflected a position different than that. Now, he relies on Wozniak and Sunlightner for the proposition that an effect on future earnings can be indicative of a due process deprivation. The problem is he's focusing on the second part of the inquiry without looking at the first. This case, in the Barrows case in 2007, made clear that you have to have a violation of a property right that causes an economic harm. you can, to satisfy the second part, the economic harm part, you can look to the future and see whether this would stop a promotion, et cetera. But you still need the first part, a violation of a property right. Sun Lightner, for instance, there was a demotion. There's no doubt that there was a demotion. The argument was that, well, the employee covered, he took other jobs, so he didn't have any economic harm. And the court, in answering that issue, aside from the demotion, i.e. whether the property interest was violated, said, well, we can look to an impediment to future earnings to determine if there was an economic harm. But again, that question we don't get to until there was a violation of a property interest. Finally, in closing, I would like to add, even if there was a property right here, Mr. Conde was afforded process. He had several disciplinary hearings, and he also had the grievance procedure through the collective bargaining agreement. He received notice, and he received the opportunity to state his case that, in fact, these were not fair or lawful orders that he had to follow. For these reasons, Your Honor, we ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Legner.
Thank you.
Mr. Krajewski, I think your time had expired, but you may have a minute.
I'll just take 1 minute to state that in Atterbury, the Wozniak case and Sunlighter case weren't discussed. In fact, the court said that Sunlighter was decided too late because of the time frame there. And as far as the due process point that was raised, these disciplinary hearings certainly did not address the reshaping of the duties. They were strictly the violations that occurred. So we contend that there was no process at all. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Krajewski. Mr. Legner, the court appreciates your stepping in and ably representing the state, and the panel would like you to extend to Mr. Burks our condolences on his loss. Case is taken under advisement, and the...